If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's live broadcast. Absolutely delighted to be here with one of my patrons, Hannah Basley. She has done the Montane Spine Challenger this summer. Absolutely incredible feat. She's got two kids, and we don't know how she fits it in. And even more importantly, we want to know how she was smiling in every single one of those pictures that she sent me. So welcome, Hannah. How are you doing?
Yeah, good, thanks. Yeah.
Awesome.
Don't get interrupted by a child.
How have you bribed the child this time?
There may be a potential visit to a KFC afterwards.
Oh, lovely.
Gone for the hardcore stuff.
Oh, yeah. Gone hardcore. I very much approve. So just explain to anybody who's not heard of the Spine Race and the Spine Challenger, explain which one you were doing and... and a little bit about the course, like start and finish and the distances.
Yeah, so I think the Spine Race started as being just a winter event.
Yeah.
And it's essentially the length of the Pennine Way from Edale to Kirkyetholm on the Scottish border. So it's quite a challenging route. There's quite a few hills. There's none of the big known peaks in the UK, but there's some big hills and national parks. So the full distance is 268. They also have a challenger, which is, it seems to vary. The winter one is 108, and the summer one is a little bit more because it finishes a little bit further north.
Yeah.
And I think after they started the winter one, they introduced a summer one as well. They also have sprint distance, which is I think about 46 miles.
Oh, so, they have a sprint now, do they?
Yeah, and they've got the they've introduced the Challenger North as well, which is the same, the other part that I haven't done that makes up the full race.
Yes, so, is it called the Spine Challenger or the Spine Challenge?
The Spine Challenger.
Challenger. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and it's also referred to as the Fun Run, isn't it?
Yeah. Kind of.
And well, from the picture on the thumbnail, it looks like you're having a great deal of fun. Explain, first of all, could you just tell me why you decided to sign up for it?
I don't know. I remember actually first seeing people sharing stuff the year that I'm blank now.
A few years ago.
Yeah, it was a few years ago. It just looked amazing. I was watching the daily updates and I just thought this is incredible. This is something I'd love to do one day.
Really?
Admittedly, it was the winter one.
And yeah.
I'm not convinced about, I've got a feeling that one day I might enter the winter one. I might end up moving along that trajectory.
Wow.
But I looked at it and I thought that's amazing and I really want to work towards doing it.
Wow.
It's Jasmine Paris did it.
Amazing.
So that was amazing, and as a mum as well, watching her doing that and expressing checkpoints and still beating the boys.
Yeah, that was amazing, wasn't it, that she did that? That was a couple of years ago now, wasn't it, when she I think she just had one at the time.
I looked into it. Yeah, and the more I looked into it, the more I thought, you know what? I reckon it's something that I feel I can achieve long term. So
yeah.
Yeah.
And so we did cover your training in the first video that we did about this. I'll link to this in the film description below and in the podcast show notes. We interviewed Hannah before the race just to see how her training had gone. But just in a bit of a nutshell, how did you train for this? Because 100 miles, you can't really go out and run 100 miles every weekend to train for that, can you?
No, it was fitting it in when I could. I was mainly aiming at time on feet, so days out training. I did a recce on part of the route with someone I've met at a previous event that was also doing the race, a lady called Lizzie. It was great. So we did a recce from sort of Cowling area up to finished between Fountainsfell and Penygent. And
okay.
That was really useful because actually we did it kind of through the night, including a little bivvy at Malham Tarn, which was freezing. It's a cold wind blowing across the tarn. But yeah, it was really useful because it included going across the limestone pavement above Malham Cove.
Oh yeah, that's tricky, isn't it? And slippery.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'd seen mentioned about if you don't go across there, if you kind of carry on going and then you go across the back, so it's less treacherous.
Yeah.
So we did that section in the dark, and that was useful knowing that we'd done it before.
Yes.
Again.
Yeah. So you kind of vaguely knew where to go. How's your navigation? Did you have to train for the navigation at all, or are you pretty good at that?
It wasn't too bad. It's fairly easy to sort of navigate most of it, to be honest. I used a mixture of having the OS app on my phone, but also I got myself a GPS device beforehand because I didn't, if it was raining or what have you, the phone might be a bit difficult.
Yeah.
And also battery capacity. I've got like a Garmin GPS device, really handy, and it shows where you are.
Yeah.
There were a couple of times when towards the end where navigation's challenging just because you haven't got the mental capacity any longer to figure out. I remember I stood at a gate thinking, I'm pretty sure I go this way, but what if it's that way? Where there wasn't even a distinguishable path. I was standing there looking at my GPS device, wondering what to do, and I couldn't stand any longer, so I sat down looking at it instead.
And you're like, is it this way? Is it that way? Because sometimes when you stop and then you kind of forget where you've been moving from, it's unclear as to like which way that is pointing, isn't it? It must be really hard when you're sleep deprived.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you did the recce, and then how many? So you're with your two girls, you're able to juggle it with your husband so that you can spend a whole day of the weekend. You kind of swap days on the weekend, or are you able to do both days on the weekend?
It was mainly one day, just because, like, a combination of mum guilt, but also my husband does work some weekends as well, so. Actually, it's only 2 out of 4 weekends I had an availability to get out for a whole day.
Yeah.
The other ones were very limited. So, it's not as much training as I'd have liked to have done.
Yeah.
Just because of the time involved.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've got things I know I can improve on for my next event. So.
Yeah.
And sneaking in extra bits here and there.
Yeah, I'll just make a note of that because I'm going to ask you about those improvements later on. First of all, what was your favourite part of the entire race experience?
I think it's the people. I find it was amazing. It's the people doing the race. They're brilliant. And the people involved, like helping at the race, at the checkpoints and at the safety teams that are out on the course. Everyone was just so lovely and everyone was kind of in it together and they just want you to get to the finish. Officially unofficial checkpoint as well. There's an extra like little mini Craven Tri Club checkpoint as well. So then they kind of do it off their own backs. And they treat you like royalty in a tent, like help. So, yeah, it's just everyone is just so lovely.
So there's a really nice atmosphere on the race, because you've sent me several photos of yourself on the race and you always just got this massive grin ear to ear, whether it's nighttime, whether it's raining, whether you're halfway up a hill, whether you're sat down eating some food. It was just like grin from ear to ear. Did you feel like that the whole way, or were there any sort of hard points where you really had to wrestle with the why and and the hurt?
I definitely didn't feel like that the whole way. Yeah, I mean, I struggled. There was one point where I started to struggle. It was on a diversion on a road heading towards Gargrave. I mean, you start to struggle. Like, I start to feel a bit weary-legged even at Black Hill, which was early on. But I think that's just normal, and you just work through it.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
How far is that one then at Black Hill?
Oh, that's not far. It's less than 30 miles. Mm. But you've had some of the hardest section. You've had Kinder, Bleaklow, Laddo Rocks, and then you climb like ascent up to Black Hill. So
yeah,
it felt better. You know, once I'd got that out of the way, it felt a bit easier. And as I say, further on from Galgrave, I started to feel a bit weary. I'd managed to somehow lose my spare cash and my bank card my driver's license out of my little pocket that I'd left unzipped. Another competitor ran up behind us and said, "Oh, is one of you Hannah?"
Oh.
And I was like, "Oh, you hero."
Oh, brilliant.
So that was a highlight. But yeah, so we had a little bivvy after Galgrave in side of a field, just to freshen me up a bit.
Yeah.
And yeah, the theme in the over the last day was particularly hard. Mm. And just even, it's amazing how sleeping for even like a couple of minutes gives you enough of a boost to carry on a bit further.
Really? So how long did it take you in total then, in hours?
Well, the time limit is 60 hours.
Okay.
I think I was only about two and a bit hours under that.
Wow.
I had a bit more in hand, but the last day I just found extremely hard. It was sleep deprivation, struggling with nutrition, and it was really hot as well. I was getting sunburned.
I'd left
my lotion in my drop bag.
Oh no. Can you have access to your drop bag at any point? There's certain checkpoints presumably where you can have access to the drop bag.
Yeah, only at the checkpoints, which are a long distance in between. So
yeah,
I'd had access to it near Hebden Bridge, which was quite far back at that point. And the next time I had access to it was at the finish.
Oh, okay. So you only get one chance to get the sun cream and things. Oh, that's really difficult. And so 60 hours, I've just done some arithmetic, and that's around 2.5 days. So how much sleep did you get then over the entire course? You've just mentioned one bivvy. Is that the only opportunity? Is that the only sleep that you took in those 2.5 days?
Well, I did. I tried to sleep at the Hebden Hay checkpoint. It's one of those things, you hear different advice. You know, a lot of people say they don't bother. But then I thought, we got there at about, I think, 1 a.m. I thought, well, your body clock, you'll want to have a sleep. It's just too noisy and just not very comfortable.
Yeah.
So I spent time trying to sleep and just not really getting. I probably had a bit of a snooze every so often, like over the course of a couple of hours of trying. But it wasn't anything significant. And then I tried to sleep again at the Craven Try unofficial checkpoint. They had a tent with them, you could get your head down, and that didn't really particularly work either.
Yeah.
And then there was a little bivvy, and I didn't even have a proper sleep then. It was just, I could feel myself dozing, and then I'd just wake up again.
Yeah.
Then a few minutes here and there.
Yeah.
I didn't spell on the finish.
I wonder if anybody, you know, like as somebody who's a really good sleeper, I wonder if anyone's just gone, oh, I'll just go for a 10-minute power nap, and then they've woken up like the next morning and haven't had time to complete the race. Like they've had 8 hours. Yeah. No, they've had to run the entire thing.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, towards the end, I wasn't setting an alarm because I was just lying uncomfortably on the side of the trail, putting my head down. But there was one bit before the climb up Penigent where I did set an alarm just in case, because I just felt so wiped out. And that was just after I'd spoken to one of the film crew about how I was going to get a little top up of sleep before I went up Penigent. And that was just lying down on a bit of grassy bank on top of my bivvy with a jacket over me.
Yeah.
And I literally just a few minutes, the caffeinated Morton gel and a bit of chocolate and a talking to, kind of things like that kind of help get you going.
Yeah. Yeah. So in total, how many hours sleep do you think you got in the whole kind of just sub 60 hour race?
Maybe a couple, if that.
Like 2 hours. Yeah. Wow. I bet you slept a long time afterwards.
Yes, I slept really well that night, actually, the night I finished.
Yeah.
It was wonderful.
A good 15 hours. What kept you going then? You said you gave yourself a good talking to and some chocolate and a caffeine gel, which sounds like a good idea. But yeah, what kept you going throughout?
I just didn't want the disappointment of not finishing. I didn't, you know, I'd be really gutted and really... really bad about myself if I didn't finish, so I didn't want that. You know, I had my family that had been supporting me while I was training, so I wanted them to be proud, I wanted the kids to be proud. I've been on and spoken to you about doing the race, so I didn't want to then like succeed. That makes sense. Just like, yeah, and like, you know, people I know that are like, oh yeah, you know, you'll do it, you'll get to the finish, you've got a real strong, you've got a lot of resilience and stuff. And so yeah, it was things like that, really. Yeah, just a combination of everything, like expectation that, oh yeah, you'll do it, Hannah. And I was like, well, I've got to then.
Yeah. So, yeah. And you mentioned your daughters there. How old are you? Do you mind sharing their ages?
Yeah, one's 11 and, sorry, his, and this one's 9.
Yeah.
Sorry, we've been...
oh, I haven't got... Oh, here we go. I'll put it all on. Oh, there's a guinea pig.
Yes.
Lovely. Oh, hello, guinea pig.
She's ugly.
She's off, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, that's my 9-year-old.
Oh, hello.
2 days a week. I think she's just...
Yeah. And did you say that one of your children has SEN as well, special educational needs? Is it quite challenging with that, doing this kind of thing?
Yeah, definitely.
What would you say?
Time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She wasn't in school while I was doing all the training. She's now in school 2 days a week at the moment. So, but yeah, just juggling everything. It's not like previously I'd have days off in a week and I could actually fit in training during those school hours.
Yeah.
But yeah, not anymore.
Yeah, now that, yeah, you can't. Yeah, it must be really challenging. But then do you find that having a goal like that, like a big, scary goal like that, really, any time you have got, you go, right, I'm definitely going to do this now?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's kind of my sanity, really. I think if I didn't have something else that I can focus on and spend my time obsessing over, because I think with these big races, you do end up really so focused and so obsessed about them and think about them all the time. And I think that's it's my escape to go into that space.
Yeah,
as it were.
Yeah, it's like it's hard work, but in a different way, in like a physical way, but completely different mental way. Yeah. And I was interested to know, because you know how you said you were tired even just before 30 miles, because it's really difficult, like uphills and downhills on the first part. I'm just interested to know how much of a long race like this, 114 miles, how much of it is actually running for you?
Not much, to be honest.
Yeah.
I ran across the start line just for the fun of it. We were like, we're gonna run across. I did quite a lot of it with this Lizzie that I did the recce with.
So
we ran across the start line and then we just settled into like a reasonably fast paced hike. We did run some sections along the, there's some sort of slabs between the Botma Kinder Scouts. It's along Featherbed Moss between Kinder and Snake Pass. So we ran along there. I ran along some reservoirs before Studley Pike and I ran across the finish line.
Do you say 20% running, 80% walking, well, speed hiking presumably?
I'd say probably only about 5%.
Okay, yeah,
running, if that, probably that. Yeah, it's mainly for me, it's mainly hiking. I think even the people that are at the pointy end do quite a bit of hiking because you need to, but yeah, for me it was almost all hiking. And you can hike it all. It's just, it's a different challenge, isn't it, for the people at the top end. They don't have the sleep deprivation in something like the Challenger. They've got other challenges of like managing their nutrition and keeping, you know, and their legs and stuff at those speeds. But I think for me at the other end, it's the sleep deprivation is the biggest issue, I think, because that affects everything. It affects your nutrition because you're not you've not got that mental capacity to be like, I've got to keep eating. So it all ends up starting to fall apart at the end. Well, that's what it was like for me.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So I was going to come to that as well, about packing and eating. But seeing as you mentioned eating, let's cover that first. What did you take with you to eat, and what worked and what didn't?
I took a mixture of, so I took some Tailwind, some gels. On the first day, I had some rounds of sandwiches as well, because I quite like peanut butter and jam sandwiches for a day out.
Yeah.
And I had some cheese sandwiches. And it's get food in at other places. So I had energy bars, like flapjack type things as well.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you get food at certain places. So there was Nikki's food van.
Yum.
Near the M62 crossing, which was amazing. I had a halloumi roll, and it was literally at that point the best thing I'd ever eaten in my life.
Was it hot as well? Like, oh no, it was, yeah, summer, wasn't it? So you don't necessarily need a load of hot stuff.
No, but it wasn't. It was starting to cool down because it was the evening when I arrived there.
Yeah,
and the light was starting to fade. So yeah, it was great. There was a proper toilet. There was somewhere to sit down, and you could like change your layers before you went back out. With the you know, the night coming, and there was other people there, so everyone was chatting away, so that was brilliant. And then there was the obviously you've got the checkpoint, you get a full meal, and
brilliant.
You've got more food in your drop bag.
Yeah.
And then you've got the Crave and Try Club place where I discovered the joys of tinned peaches.
Oh, lovely.
They
were
amazing.
Yeah,
they were really nice, and they had all sorts. They just kept offering different food, and I had bacon roll as well.
Lovely.
And then you had the co-op at Gargrave, which sadly there wasn't as much choice as I'd hoped, because I think all the quicker people had like cleared out most of the sandwich section. Yeah, so there wasn't much there, but I did have some extra stuff there. And I think the next point I was able to sort of eat was the checkpoint 1.5 at Malham Tarn, which they don't supply any food. They supply hot water and sort of teas and coffees and things and juice, but it's just somewhere to sit down in a warm room. I had a double ice cream cone which was wonderful. And I just, because I've not been by that point very good with my nutrition, I think if I hadn't had that, I don't even know if I'd have got to the finish. That just gave me enough boost just to keep on.
Yeah, a bit of sugar.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Brilliant. So did you eat like every half hour, or you mentioned that you got a bit kind of lackadaisical with the feeding towards the end. Did you start off with the best of intentions, with a plan or anything like that?
Yeah, I didn't have a specific plan, just to try and keep eating.
Yeah.
Which is something I will improve on, I think. For next time, I'll plan to manage my nutrition better. And I think with the sleep deprivation and just general tiredness, I just really forgot to eat. I just didn't feel hungry. Because usually if I'm out training, if I start having a bit of a rumbling tummy, I know that I've kind of not eaten enough. Whereas I didn't even have the rumbling tummy. It didn't trigger me to eat. And so I just didn't really eat much. And then you're like, oh, but it's, you know, it's only 15 miles to the finish. But then you're like, 50 miles at the pace I was going by then is a long time.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a few hours in the heat of the day as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, your brain just doesn't function enough. So I've got to, yeah, that's something to work on.
Yeah.
Including in training as well, just literally keep eating, like say every half an hour.
Yeah. Yeah. Something like little things, little portions of things. I think you can also, on those Garmin watches, I think you can set a little timer. Like to beep at you every half hour to say eat, and like it flash up an eat thing.
Yeah, so I need to do something just to help me with that, because I know that was a big challenge in the last day.
Yeah, it does sound like a challenge as well. And also, I'm really interested in what you packed as well. So there must be quite a big mandatory kit list for going such a long way and such a remote distance between checkpoints. Was there anything that was like particularly essential that you couldn't have lived without? What was in your bag?
Yeah, I mean, we were lucky with the weather. The weather was amazing, so we didn't have anything that was too... You know, I think if it had been raining, it had been a different matter. We had one little spell of rain. My waterproof went on a couple of times, once because it was raining and another time just because it was... We left Malham Tarn checkpoint, like checkpoint 1.5 in the middle of the night, and the temperature had really dropped. Mm. It was a clear night. And you come out of a hot room... Well, warm room into the outdoors. So,
yeah.
I'm glad I had a fairly robust waterproof because that gave me an extra bit of warmth. Like the kit list, there's lots of things I didn't use. I did use my bivy bag. I didn't take any airbed or anything with me because I kind of figured I'd just lay down and sleep, which I did, and it would have been a bit of a faff to get that sorted.
Yeah.
Foot-wise, I'm glad I looked after my feet.
Yeah, how did you do that then?
Well, I'd seen lots of information about making sure your feet were nice and soft and supple beforehand. So I bought these foot things, like literally where you end up almost like grating the hard skin off your feet using moisture overnight in the week leading up to it.
Oh, brilliant.
So my feet are nice and soft.
Yeah, because I didn't know that, because do you remember I had Nikki from the Dragon's Back medic team and the Cape Breath Ultra medic team. She came on, didn't she, and she told us all about blisters. I'll put a link to it in the film description in the podcast show notes below. And she did a chat with us about how to repair various different types of blisters and lesions and chafing. And she said that it's really important to keep your feet soft and supple, whereas before, I'm sure we'd always been told, like when I was at school and stuff like that, that you should like let them harden up. And, you know, calluses were almost a good thing, but actually... They're not, are they? Because they can all come off in all in one go, which is revolting. So you kept them nice and supple. That's good to hear that worked.
Yeah. So and I used the Injinji toe socks. Mm-hmm.
And what shoes did you use?
I used the Scott Kinabalu Ultra.
Uh huh.
I packed another pair of shoes in my kit bag, and I had a bit of a sore little toe. It wasn't a blister. I think it was just a bit of a pressure point. By checkpoint one.
Yeah.
So I tried the other shoes and I thought, actually, they're no better, so I'll stick with the Scots. And it didn't really bother me for the rest of the race. So whether that was because it was not so bad, because I put fresh socks on and fresh lube on my feet, whether it's because it's not so bad or whether it's because other things are just...
Other things got worse, yeah.
So you don't really think about it. But I did actually lose that toenail a few weeks after the race.
Yeah,
it didn't turn black or anything. It just lifted off a few weeks after.
Oh.
But yeah, no blisters or hot spots, but your feet take a pounding. So
yeah.
By the last day, just being on your feet are just sore.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just the pressure of being on them.
Yeah.
I don't know what you can really do about that.
Yeah. Fly.
Hop. So my little micro sleep. Just make sure the weight was off my feet as well, and that just helped.
Yeah.
Even a few minutes off your feet, and it just made a difference.
Yeah. I remember when I've done ultras and stuff in the past, like when I did the Bob Graham round, I remember the duvet even being too much for my feet, like on top of my feet. I was like, no, get it off my feet. It's too much pressure on the feet. But we covered the shoes, didn't we? There was the Scott Kinabalu. We've got a question from Coolin Olympia, who says, what shoes? We've covered the shoes, Scott Kinabalu. And what raincoat did you use? Yeah, what? So do you remember the brand of waterproof that you used?
Yeah, so I had a couple with me. So I had one out with me on the first day, which was a Columbia Outdry, which I'd actually bought secondhand off eBay.
Oh, cool.
A little while before, like if I bought it for 25 quid or something. I'd heard really good things. Mm. I've heard other people in the spine group mention about how great they are.
Mm-hmm. Because I think
Ian Keith
runs for Columbia, doesn't he? And he's a previous spine race winner, and he's always there in his Columbia jacket. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's I've seen him rave about them as well, and like he'd still use them if he wasn't like Columbia athlete.
Yeah, that's probably why he is one. He probably wrote to them and said, oh, hi, I really like this stuff. Can I be an athlete for you?
Yeah, but as I say, it didn't really get tested. I did also have an Om Kamlika jacket with me as well.
Yeah.
But I think I just carried on with the Columbia one in a way through the whole race.
Yeah.
So just I had a decathlon, one. Like the trail runner waterproofs, the trail running waterproof trousers.
Yeah.
But I don't think I even got those out. I just wore shorts the whole time.
Yeah.
Even when it's cold overnight. Cause if my upper body's all right, my legs are okay.
So. Yeah. Okay. That's cool. And did you use poles at all? I didn't.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
The whole race. I couldn't have done it without my poles.
Okay. Yeah. So what?
So those were the Harrier. The Harrier Carbon poles.
Oh, the Harrier Carbon, the Helvellyn ones.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, because that was before they brought out the Pro, wasn't it? So
yes.
They're the £70 ones. The new ones are a little bit lighter. Are you going to treat yourself?
One day I will. I can't really justify buying a new shirt. I'm all right.
You could always sell them on eBay and then move to the next one.
Yeah, true. Yeah. But I couldn't have done it without them.
Mm-hmm.
I think it just helps you up the hills. It helps you down the hills. It helps you taking the weight off your feet when you're tired. Like, even if I was standing there chatting, by the end of it, my feet really sore. I just, like, lean my weight on the poles rather than on my feet.
Yeah, so, because you've got a fair amount. Yeah, you've got a fair amount to carry, haven't you? On the thumbnail picture, you can see that your backpack's quite full. So you definitely need the poles. And on the live chat, Severin's watching, another patron. She says, hello, these are the poles that I'm going to win next month. Because they're in the competition for patrons next month. The new Carbon Pro ones, yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. How could we know that?
Yeah. on the theme of gear, do you know what the GPS watch is called that you use? Do you know which Garmin that you use?
Oh, no, well, my watch, I just used, I've got a Coros.
Oh, you had a Coros, okay.
Yeah, an Apex.
Yeah.
Yeah, Apex Pro, I think.
Oh, okay.
I didn't use the mapping on there. It's just like a breadcrumb trail.
So just an arrow with a line, isn't it? I don't find that very easy to navigate with.
Yeah, but the GP is a Garmin handheld device that I used for the mapping. It was a Etrex 20.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the little yellow one with a little kind of little signal. What do you call it? A little antennae thing, little black antenna thing.
Yeah, I don't think it's sticking out.
Oh, okay.
There's other ones that do, like, 64 or something.
Okay.
Does or 62, but yeah, it doesn't have one sticking out. But it was really, really easy to use.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't afford the official OS mapping for it, because that's a lot. That's like more than the device costs.
Really? Wow.
But yeah, I got there's a guy called Talkie Toaster that does his own like stuff for it, and it's that worked really well, because you basically need the trail. As long as you've got the GPX file onto it,
mm-hmm.
that shows where the trail is.
Yeah.
And you just keep on following that line. So
yeah.
And you've got, it gives you information. It's not like an OS app, but it does give you other information as well, like gates and stiles and roads. And,
okay.
So yeah, you just keep following that line, whichever colour you set it to. Yeah.
So that's Talkie Toaster. Does he just sort of draw the OS map out or something again?
He uses like, because I was asking for advice on the spine group.
Yeah.
There was lots of talk about you can actually upload mapping yourself, like just by using what's available online.
Okay.
Which Talkie Toaster kind of amalgamates a lot of that mapping himself,
uh-huh.
and then sells the product. It's not that expensive.
Okay.
So, yeah. So you just get it saved onto a card, a memory card.
Yeah.
And then you've got it, and as I say, and then any GPX device file you upload onto it will show.
It'll show some map features, can it?
Yeah, yeah. So it's not like OS map, but it's still mapping. It shows you where you're going, and it Rather, so I found it really useful.
Yeah, so rather than just a blank screen and a breadcrumb trail, just the line and the arrow, you've got a little bit of like
features
and things like that. Oh, I've never heard of that before. I'm just Googling it now. Torquay Toaster, here to help with all your Garmin OSM mapping needs. Ah, cool. So yeah, it's just a lot cheaper than OS if you don't need the whole of the world on a map. Then you just get your little bit. Yeah. Ah, that sounds great.
So I practiced with it beforehand, obviously, because you don't want a whole new like way of looking at the map.
Yeah.
On race day. So yeah, I was doing sort of recces with it and training with it on long runs and long walks and stuff.
Yeah.
It was handy because, I mean, for the summer it's optional to have a GPS device, mm-hmm. but for the winter you have to have a GPS device.
Yeah. Okay. And Andrea says the second generation eTrex is great for that distance. She's got the 10, which only has the breadcrumb navigation. So she says that sounds a really, really good shout. And she said also she really likes the Cat Bell poles, which are the Harrier poles, which weigh quite a lot. I think they weigh 560 grams for the pair, so that is quite a lot.
They're the aluminium ones, aren't they?
Yeah, so super strong, but a little bit heavier, but only 40 quid. So.
Yeah, and I suppose you're less likely to break them. There's always that fear, especially you have to be careful between the slabs.
Yeah.
You don't get a pole stuck.
Yeah.
And end up snapping it because I would have been devastated.
Yeah. You'd have to go and buy another one or get the Harrier people to just like drone one over to you. Because I suppose aluminium would bend, wouldn't it? Whereas the carbon poles would just snap. And then you can take some gaffer tape, but it's not really the same after that, is it?
Yeah. I mean, if I ever did the full one, maybe a set of poles in your drop bag, a spare set of poles would probably be worth it. Because can you imagine breaking a pole early on?
It'd be sad.
They're one of the biggest things that helped me through the race, I think.
Mm-hmm. And so then coming towards the end of the race, how were you feeling? Like when there was just 5 miles to go and you kind of knew that you'd got this, did you feel like super happy or were you just really tired?
I was a bit of a wreck. There was a guy, a safety team guy, kind of at the top of Cam High Road, like in his car, and he's like, "Oh, how are you?" And I think this was about 10K to go, and I literally just burst into tears at him. He actually said, "If it's any consolation, there's people that were way ahead of you that pretty much gave me the same response."
Oh, yeah.
And then like, you've got this, you know, you just keep on moving and you'll be fine. But it was really hard. And there was one point when I think I was even approaching Hawes, so it wasn't far to go at all. And my husband sent me a message on WhatsApp saying, "Oh, you know, you're doing great, you know, you're nearly there." And I couldn't be bothered to type, so I phoned him and just cried down the phone. I literally had, I think, about 2 or 3 miles at this point.
Yeah.
So I was a bit of a state, really.
Were you crying because you were in a lot of pain, or do you think you were crying because you just had no sleep for the last 2 days?
I think it was a mixture. I just felt horrendous.
Oh, no.
I think it was the lack of sleep, the lack of enough water. I had water, I just didn't drink enough. I had food, I just didn't eat enough. Mm-hmm. So all of those things combined I was a bit of a wreck.
You were depleted. Yeah.
Very depleted. I kept weeing and I was like, I don't know how I keep weeing. Something's not right here because I keep peeing and I'm not taking in enough. And it's blazing good day. The back of my neck and the back of my calves were like red in the sun. It was beating down from behind and it was, it was just horrible. Oh. But yeah, I managed to like run across the finish line.
Well, hey.
And everything changes then. You're like, "Oh my God, I've done it.
I'll go around again." Why do I sign up for next year?
Well, that wasn't my initial thought, Claire.
not the initial thought, but we'll come to that question in a minute. We've got a couple more live questions. Coolin Olympia says, how much running did she do versus walking and hiking? So it was 95% walking,
at least,
and 5% running. And oh yes, that's what they want to know. Everyone wants to know how long did it take to finish the race? It was just sub 60, you said.
I think it was about 56 or 57, something.
I'm sure you said about 56 or 7 hours.
I can't even remember how long it took.
That's amazing. And everyone wants to know as well, how did your recovery go? Like, could you walk afterwards? How long did everything take to sort of get back to normal?
To be honest, obviously stairs were very difficult the next day, but my quads almost improved from between about by the end. My quads felt better than they did during the race. Probably the last day I was moving so slowly that my muscles almost started to recover. Active recovery. But my calves went really tight. They were quite like swollen and a bit sore, and my feet were a bit sore, but by the next day things were a lot better. I think it took me about a couple of weeks, and then I was able to run slowly again. I think probably less than that. I think I ran a bit too quickly, to be fair. But it felt all right, and then it's just a case of just taking it easy and just giving my body time to recover.
Just ease back into it. And did you treat yourself to any kind of special meal afterwards? Did you take great care of your nutrition, or did you just like get beer and pizza and just be done with it?
Yeah, I can't even remember what I ate. I planned to like try and eat loads that evening after I'd finished. I stayed at the youth hostel in Hawes, but I couldn't even be bothered to leave my room to go and get anything that evening. So all the food that I hadn't eaten in the race, and I had in my drop bag as well, I just ploughed into that. So I had plenty of stuff.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be healthy, but crisps and biscuits and like tiffin and like all sorts of I think I had a pepperami stick in there.
Yeah.
And then the next day I had an amazing breakfast there, because it's a YHA, but it's almost like semi-independent.
Okay.
So it's not a YHA breakfast, it's they do their own one, and it was amazing.
Brilliant. Yeah, that's just the kind of thing you need, a nice hot big filling breakfast to just send you on your way. And then did you have to drive home then, or did someone pick you up?
Well, I planned to get the train. There's like a little mini bus service, and I planned to get that to train station. I think I was going to go to Gargrave and then get the train home and then just get picked up from the local train station, but there's a train strike. So my husband had to then drive up with my youngest, so 2.5 hours each way to pick me up from Hawes, which wasn't ideal. I think he sold it to my daughter, as it's only like about an hour and a half each way.
Yeah.
And she was not impressed, and the journey just kept going on.
Oh no.
There was an obligatory McDonald's on the way home for her as a bit of a reward.
Yeah. So. And then a KFC at the end.
Yeah.
I see how it goes. Oh, we've got some, everybody thinks you're amazing. We've got some really lovely comments coming in. Severin says, you are a legend. Well done, so impressed. Coolin Olympia says, wow, great job, very inspiring, unbelievable. I guess I could try something amazing too. So you're inspiring a lot of people here today. Coolin Olympia wants to know, did you use a water filter in the race? And if so, which one?
I had one, but I just had it buried in my pack. I didn't need it. They did have some water stops, which they were at pains to say they may not be there because they may be out dealing with people that need help and support. Is it catted in B3 or something? I can't remember how to pronounce it.
Yeah,
I used it once a few years ago, but... Yeah, I didn't need it. I never ran particularly low on water, to be fair.
Yeah.
As I say, you've got the first day, you've got stops at some of the roads where you can just literally just fill up your water. I think they're allowed 500 mils. And then you've got other places like Gargrave and checkpoint 1.5 where you can get water. So yeah, to be honest, there wouldn't have been many places to get water, especially in the first part, because it was quite dry.
Yeah.
So very dry underfoot. So there wasn't many opportunities anyway. So that you had to carry a minimum, I think you had to have a minimum capacity to carry 3 litres.
Okay.
You didn't have to carry 3 litres, but you had to have a minimum. So I set off with 2.5 litres.
Yeah.
I could have got away with less, but then you don't know if,
yeah,
like the mountain rescue teams, roads would be off and then you'd be in trouble. So
yeah
I didn't want to take that time.
Yeah, it's horrible being without water, isn't it?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing what you did. You mentioned that you have some improvements. So does that mean that you're entered for next year?
I've not entered the spine race, no. So yeah, because during the race, I sent my husband a text saying, never let me enter anything like this ever again.
Oh no, has he printed that out and framed it and put it in the kitchen?
Right. And also at the finish, when I saw Lizzie, who I'd done some of it with, and I'd left her to go ahead at Fountains Fell, I said to her, I don't think I ever do want to do the full spine race.
Yeah.
But actually, yeah.
Did you just say full spine race?
Yeah, I will. I think I'm going to enter one day. Not yet.
Wow.
But I do want to enter the summer one day.
Yeah, yeah. Not the winter one? Would you do the winter challenger as a step up?
No, I'd probably the summer, I'd say.
Yeah.
Maybe in the next few years, I'll do the full summer one.
Yeah.
And yeah, my initial thought when I finished the race was like, I know I wanted to do the full one day, but no.
Yeah.
But I think the general consensus, I think a lot of people are broken by the time they get to checkpoint 2.
Yeah.
And just having a proper meal and a sleep and they go again. In fact, I heard an interview with Sabrina Pace Humphreys that she gave after the race to someone on a podcast. And it really resonated with me how she felt by the time she got to Hard Draw,
mm-hmm.
and she was able to just then keep going.
Yeah.
So I even messaged her and said, that's really given me the incentive. I feel that I've got a chance of doing it, like,
yeah,
based on that she managed to
pull it back round.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I think the checkpoints they're still about every 40 odd miles, but you've not got a big gap. Such a big gap between checkpoints as you have between Hebden Bridge and Hard Draw. So
yeah. So once you get there, you've like broken the back of it and then you could continue. So yeah. So will you be doing the challenger?
No. Well, I haven't entered it yet because I don't know which version, but I was going to do the Challenger North because that's new for next summer.
Cool.
It's already done in the winter.
What's the Challenger North then? Is it the opposite direction?
No, it's from Hard Draw to Kirkyettle.
Oh, okay. So there's the first one is Edale to Hard Draw, and then you've got Hard Draw to Kirkyettle. Oh, so you can recce the spine race.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I'm going to do an ultra on the Pennine Bridleway.
Okay.
So it's organised by Stu Westfield, who used to be in the safety team at the spine.
I've heard the name, yeah.
Yeah, and he lives in the Peak District virtually the Peak District. So he organises trail races. And it just looks really fun. It's similar in terms of the support and the distances between checkpoints and things like that. It's a smaller race and it just looks really nice.
Is it 100 miles again?
It's a bit longer.
Oh, okay. So you're stepping up a little bit.
Yeah. I'm probably going to do the longer one.
Yeah.
Because I've had it in my head I'm going to do that, which it's 270 kilometres, which is about 168 miles.
Oh, the perfect step up, isn't it?
Depending on how my training goes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Depending how my training goes, they've also got a shorter distance.
Yeah.
Which is about half that. So I think it's about 85 miles.
Yeah.
But it's similar type of pace to the spine.
Yeah. You know,
a little bit of running, mainly fast hiking. The checkpoints, most of the checkpoints you can have a sleep. Apart from the first one where you can't. So it's a very similar kind of ethos.
Cool.
But it'd be nice because it'll be a smaller kind of setup. And as I say, I've done a couple of their races before I've helped on one of the races as well, as a tail runner kind of thing, and it was so I'm looking forward to that. It'd be nice to support a smaller race organization, and I've heard good things from the people that did the first one last year or this year. So,
and when is that one then? Is it the same kind of time?
It's April, okay. So it's a bit earlier.
April.
So weather might be more changeable.
Yeah, be a bit cooler.
You know, it's similar stuff you have to take in your kit and things. So it's very similar, but yeah, on the Pennine Bridleway rather than the Pennine Road.
Yeah, that's good that there's all these options, isn't there? And it is funny how people call it ultra running. It's not really ultra running, is it? It's just ultra hiking, really.
It makes it sound a lot easier,
but actually once I trained for the Cape Wrath Ultra and I did a lot of running, and then I got to the Cape Wrath Ultra and all I was doing was hiking with poles, and I was like, I haven't trained for this at all. This feels really weird. So I think you'll have to do a lot of hiking in your training, won't you?
So it is literally just going to be just getting time on feet as much as I can. We've got a dog as well, so that'll get me out more.
We've got
a dog in the summer. So
fantastic.
And also just any opportunity I can.
Hello.
we've got a guest again.
She probably wants mummy back. But I just wanted to ask you what your top improvements would be for next time.
Managing my nutrition.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I need to be PSC, that's all.
I know you do. Managing my nutrition better. Probably managing my sleep better in a way. If I did it again when I do the full one, I won't try and sleep at Hebden Hay. It's just too noisy, not comfortable.
Yeah, and sleep out on the trail.
Because actually it's amazing how restorative those little micro bivvies are, those little rests. It just gives you enough just to power through for a little bit longer. And then obviously the checkpoints further up, I think you're more likely to sleep, because by that point you're just so exhausted that your body will just go to sleep. That's hopefully how it'll be. There's so much to manage, which is kind of why it's kind of all consuming when you're training, because it isn't just about the training, it's the kit and it's the nutrition. It's just there's so much to think about and so many variables.
You've mentioned the Facebook group quite a bit. It seems like there's tons of really useful information from the community of runners that have either already run it or are training for it. That sounded like it was really important in getting you through this one.
Oh yeah, it's great. There's people there that have done numerous blind races, and people that have helped at the checkpoints as well.
Yeah.
So there's so much knowledge and information and reassurance as well. You know, when you say you're struggling to fit in time training, there's loads of people out there that are similar, and you don't need to be doing a ridiculous amount of miles per week. It's time on feet when you can.
And the determination in here not to stop, because it's going to hurt, isn't it? It's going to hurt at some point.
It's going to hurt. You know it's going to hurt. You're not sure quite how badly it's going to hurt or not, you know, because you've not done it before. You can't train, like I said, you can't train for that part of it. You just have to be prepared. And then it's only when you first have that hit you that you start to develop coping strategies, really.
Yeah.
So I mean, like I said, if I can do it, anyone can. To be honest, it is
really inspiring. Especially, you know, you're like so many of us. You've got you've got a job, you've got kids, you've got everything that comes with modern day life, and you're still getting out there and still planning to do all these amazing things. It's really, really inspiring. It makes me think, maybe I could do the Spine Challenger one day. That would be fun. It's quite a hard 100-miler to start with. Might start with a Centurion running one first. I'll do it that way. But 100 miles would be good. So just finally, before we let you go and be mum again, if you've got like one thing that you could say to give somebody advice who was thinking, I'd love to, but I could never do that. What would you say to them?
Say, if you prepare, if you prepare yourself, you don't have to be prepare like an elite athlete.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to know that it's going to be tough, but if you get a reasonable amount of training and get prepare mentally for it, then yeah, you can do. As I say, it's the good thing about the spine, you don't have to be particularly quick, so it's got such a nice generous cutoff, which appeals to me because I'm not particularly quick and I couldn't run for long spells over that kind of terrain. So yeah, anything that's got generous cutoffs is appealing to me.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah, nice.
Take that pressure off.
Yeah,
I knew the sort of pace I could maintain, and that would give me a nice buffer for if I needed any more time.
Yeah,
which I did need more time, and it never felt in doubt that I was going to, you know, I was always going to get there within the cutoff.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, don't doubt yourself and just keep going. That sounds like really good advice to me. I just want to read you out one thing from Andrea. She says, going for the full summer spine would take Hannah from legend to superhero.
Yeah, I'm gonna wait it's gonna be at least a couple of years before I do that, I think. Maybe
Workups like gradually. I mean, they're quite expensive, aren't they, these races? And I think personally, being out for like almost to the cutoff time just gets you the best value for money, really, doesn't it? Because, you know, you're making use of all those resources for the full amount of time that you're allowed to for the price. And why would you want to finish earlier? Like, there's all those views to be seen. So I think you did it the right way, exactly.
Yeah, there's some lovely views. I mean, Penny Ghent, like, as the sun was still coming up, was just stunning.
Wow.
That was beautiful. Yeah.
And Malham Cove is just spectacular, isn't it?
Well, yeah. Fortunately, I have seen it in the daylight. Yeah. I saw it in the dark during the race.
Yeah.
So otherwise I'd have been a bit miffed. But yeah, I've been there a couple of times in the daylight with family, but yeah. Yeah.
It's spectacular.
You know it's there, but it's just so dark you can't see it.
Yeah. At least you know in your mind's eye what it looks like. Oh,
yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Hannah. It's been really great having you on. And congratulations again for an amazing race on the Spine Summer Challenger. And we'll have to catch up with you again to find out how training's going for April and see which one you're going to do.
Oh, yes, I know. Yeah, I'm probably going to go the longer one.
I think you should.
The shorter one looks brilliant because I want the next challenge. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas a shorter one is less.
Yeah. Yeah.
As I say, the cutoffs for both of them look brilliant. So,
yeah. If you do the 168 and you get to 100, do you get the 80 miler medal?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, the 80 miler is. And the 85 miles is from Hebden Hay to Kirkby Stephen, whereas the full one is from Middleton Top down at the bottom of the High Peak Trail.
So it's not the same thing?
No.
Oh, it's not just going the same way and then a bit further? You just stop when you fancy?
No,
yeah.
Exactly.
Okay,
yeah.
I see. Oh, well, I think go for the big one. Why not? You've got the fitness in you. You've got the endurance in you. Just need to maintain it over the winter. Perfect winter base training.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh.
So I might do. I'll probably do the virtual spine.
In
January, just a couple of hours in my life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's my timer.
That'll probably be good.
Oh, no, I'm making chicken soup, so I've got a chicken in the oven. So I just like need to remember to take it out when I get away.
Okay.
Yeah. But I think 168 miles in April. I think you could do that.
Yes, we'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm hoping so. I am looking forward to it.
Yeah.
To doing this race. So.
Yeah. Oh, well, good luck, and we'll catch up with you again. And it's been really great to speak to you today. And just congratulations. It's absolutely fantastic and inspirational.
Oh, Thanks, Claire.
Cool. We'll say bye, everyone, now. We'll still be on Skype, but I'll say bye to everyone now. Bye, everyone. Thank you for watching. Everyone's really inspired.
Oh, brilliant. Thanks.